Take my glasses off. Say, everybody, welcome here. We're going to talk about the Visual Studio tools and how to extend them in this session. How many people have used the SharePoint developer tools before this week? Not many of us. Okay, so a lot of us are kind of getting up to speed on the tool set in general. So this is an advanced talk. Let me kind of start by kind of motivating this. How many people here are really interested in money? Greed drives them pretty much with every decision they make. Yeah, how many people fall into that category? Because this might not be a great talk for you. If you had a big pile of money over here and you have a big pile of fame and community visibility, which one are you going to be more attracted to? You know, if you're going to the money, you know, there might be another session. So what we're going to talk about in this session is basically taking the Microsoft tool set that's built into Visual Studio that makes everybody productive. And it's not about you being productive. It's about you helping other people being productive. It's taking what's inside your head, you know, the SharePoint knowledge, and trying to bottle it up and sell it or give it away to other people. You know, so that's really the gist of this talk. Now, in an ideal world, at the beginning of this talk, I'd raise my hand and say, how many people have, you know, used the SharePoint developer tools? Everyone would say, been using them for 2 years. Yeah, I know them backwards and forwards. Let's kind of go on to the more advanced topics. You know, so that being said, a lot of us are just getting started with the tool set. So what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to have an introduction to, you know, using the SharePoint tools, talk about what we get out of the box. Eventually, we're going to get to create a Visual Studio project that's an add-in. It's an extension to the tool set. And it's definitely a neat thing, you know, as far as if you're looking for something to kind of make your brain happy, you know, that you're doing something kind of really advanced. Definitely, it's going to do that for us. But it's not the kind of thing that you're going to do on a project-by-project basis. You know, maybe in a big company, I could see, you know, someone setting up some item templates, you know, so that we have 20 other SharePoint developers that are going to be creating, you know, this constant pattern again and again, you know, in different projects. You know, that might be a motivation. But another thing I want you to see is, you know, what's possible, and I think what we'll see is that there'll be a lot of, you know, neat community projects, some of which you can download, just make little adjustments to give yourselves a good starting point. Okay, now let's just kind of start with the SharePoint tools. So, back in SharePoint 2007, if you had to basically be in one of four camps, well, first of all, how many people did SharePoint 2007 development? Everybody? Okay, good. Now, if you had to put yourself into the WSP Builder, Visual Studio Tools Extensions, STS Dev, or other, how many people use WSP Builder? Okay, looks like the majority. How many use the Visual Studio extensions that were built in? Okay, one or two. Sad people, sorry about that. STS Dev, anyone use STF Dev? Okay, a couple people. And then others, how many people fell into the other category? Create your own class libraries and kind of trick them out? Okay, so it wasn't long after SharePoint 2007 hit the streets where people on the streets started saying, great platform, where the heck are the developer tools? And it was pretty obvious inside of Microsoft that, hey, we really kind of missed the boat here. The SharePoint developer experience is command lines, you know, it's batch files. So pretty early on, you know, in the design of SharePoint 2010, there was already a pretty big group assembled inside the Visual Studio team, you know, that was starting to build out the new tool set. You know, so what we have with the release of Visual Studio 2010, you know, is about two and a half year, you know, project from envisioning, talking to lots of people like you who have been, you know, doing the grudge work of, you know, programming in SharePoint without a nice tool set. And the SharePoint developer, you know, developer tools are what we got on the other side. Okay, now, let's just kind of take a drive-by of some of the things. There's going to be some project templates. There's going to be some project item templates. So let's say we had life without the SharePoint developer tools. We won't spend much time here because that's been your life as a SharePoint 2007 developer. Whether it's WSP Builder, you have, you know, lots of magic behind the scenes to build the output WSP file. So now, let's do just my first project. And I'll go ahead and start up Visual Studio 2010. And we'll come down here and we'll say, new project. And I'll create this new project, and it doesn't really matter whether you pick .NET 4. You know, remember that everything about SharePoint 2010 is .NET 3.5 with Service Pack 1. So we're going to come down here to these templates that we have. Now, it really doesn't matter which one you pick in many cases. I can pick empty SharePoint project, create a project, and then I can add a visual web part. Or I can create a visual web part, which automatically adds a visual web part for me and calls it visual web part 1. So I start most of my projects with the empty SharePoint project. Note that there are a couple things that you can't just add things inside, like a site definition is a good example of something where you can't just, you know, create the blank project and customize it by adding items, but that's, you know, usually the case is you can. So let's go ahead and create this particular project right here. Let's just do a little demo work throughout. So I'll go ahead and create a little demos directory. And inside my demos directory for my first project, better call it something better than that. Why don't we call it Egg One? Now, the next thing we have to do is we have to have a local test site. And so I'm going to go ahead and put an URL to a local site. And what I mean is that your development workstation, it has to be built out typically as a single server farm. You know, but basically, Visual Studio has to be running on the web front end. You know, so anyone who has any illusions that I'm going to be running Visual Studio on this machine and SharePoint's going to be running over there, that doesn't work. You know, basically, you have to have a single server build out. Now, why do we have this local site? Well, one of the reasons we have the local site is that when you hit debug, it can go to that particular page. But there's all kinds of other reasons. It can automatically activate features inside that target site or that target site collection. How about bouncing the worker pool? So another thing that Visual Studio does, because it tracks this site URL, it can basically use that to look up the right web application, automatically find out what IIS application pool is running for that particular IIS worker pool, and basically bounce the process, you know, every time you run the deploy command. Now, there's also this notion of deploy as sandboxed R farm solutions. Guess what I want to make you think here. There's really not such a thing as a sandbox solution. There's a WSP file, and it's of one of two kinds. A WSP file that's sandbox friendly, that you can either deploy as a sandbox solution or as a farm solution. And there are WSP files that can only be deployed as farm solutions. So don't think as you pick sandbox solution, you're actually doing anything to the project that hard codes you to the sandbox. It doesn't. It's kind of, it's a development time only choice for your particular project. In general, if you can develop for the sandbox, you know, you should, because it gives you more deployment options. Now, I've got this one particular project, there's not much going on. And so I'm going to come up here and I'm going to say add new item. I'm going to say add new item. Let's say I pick something like a web part. So just like we have project templates, we have project item templates. And they're specific to SharePoint. Now, if I look back up there at my project structure, notice that one of the things about SharePoint projects that's special is that they always have a features node. They always have that package node. Now, I could go to the features node, right-click, and say add a feature. It would add feature one. I could right-click it. I could rename it to something else. But typically, the way things work with the SharePoint tools, you don't think as much about features. You think about, what do I need? I need to add a web part. And behind the scenes, there's this project template that knows, well, a web part needs a couple different things. Well, we need a .cs or a .vb class that contains the code for the web part. What else do we need? Well, actually, we need a .web part file. So we have the web part description file, and we better put a feature in place there so that we can take that .web part file and we could push it up into the web part gallery for the target site collection. So watch what I'm going to do. I'm going to add this web part inside there. Doesn't really matter what it's called. Let's call it web part 1. And what we're going to see is that it adds a bunch of items inside, but it also added this feature. It added this particular feature. Now, let's do something else. Let's do this. Let's come back up here, create a second SharePoint project, call this one Egg 2, go through the exact same steps there. create this particular project. And now let's go to features. Say add feature, feature one. A lot of times you'll add in a particular project item and there won't be a feature, so it creates the feature automatically. And that's just something you have to get used to. Now, let's say that I come back up here and I say new item. And I say, let's go ahead and add something simple. Let's add a module, module one. Notice that it didn't add a new feature because there was a feature already there. It puts it inside there. But now here's what I want to point out. Look at the scope of this feature. Scope equals web. When you add a web part, it needs to be in a feature that's scoped to the site collection level. So scope equals site instead of scope equals web. So notice that when I add the module, it simply slid it inside the existing feature. But this time we come down here and we say add new item, and we're going to add a particular web part. And what does it do? It adds feature two. It adds feature two because there was no feature that had scope equals site. Okay. So you can add features yourself. You know, there's no problem adding features, but realize that, you know, as you add the project items in, some project items are fine to be in a feature that's scoped to web or scope equals site. A module is that type. But if you add in a project item and it doesn't have the feature it needs, that feature gets kind of added on demand. And that just takes a bit of getting used to. Or you can go pre-create the features ahead of time. Let's look at the third option we have right there. Our third option, we're going to come down here, and we're going to say new project, empty project. Let's call this one Heg 3. And this time, we'll say add feature. We'll take our feature, we'll rename the feature. So here's a convention that I use. If I have a feature that's the main feature, I have it called, actually I've got that backwards. I like to name them main site and main web. That way I can come back up here, I can make that change, and this is, you know, Ted's web part feature. Now that we've got that, let's go through here, say add new item. Now we'll go ahead and add our web part. And you can see that it's simply going to get added inside the particular feature. If I go back here, it just got added inside, didn't need to add one. Now, in addition to, you know, having these items, and the items have elements.xml files, and the elements.xml files, what are they? They're feature manifests, or I'm sorry, they're element manifests. They have to be referenced by a feature.xml file. And so here's what, you know, Visual Studio gives us, so we can kind of see the relationship of our SharePoint project items and our particular features. Okay, now if I just wanted to do hello world on this one up here, let's go up here and look at the elements.xml file. Now, the things that I'll note here, let's go back to this target website. Let's go to site settings. Let's go to our web parts gallery. There are the .web part files. So ultimately what's going to happen is that the elements.xml file is going to basically be called upon from a feature that activates at the site collection level, and it's going to be called upon to take that .web part file and create an instance of it inside the target site. Now there's this issue where if I have a solution package and you have a solution package and both of us have webpart1.webpart, whoever activates first wins. And the other tries to activate, but there's already a web part one.webpart file there. It fails. You know, so here's one thing where the tools could have gone a little bit better. And if I come down here and I look at the module, there's the path, there's the URL. That's going to be the name of the file that gets created. So why not go ahead and kind of help the tools by putting a little bit more on the name of this thing? Secondly, I'm going to come here and change my group. It's going to be seen as the web part category. now that we've changed those two files, let's go to the .web part file, and we'll come down here and say Ted's web part my web part. That's fine. I don't really want to do a talk on web parts. So what we'll do is our favorite one-line web part, this dot controls dot add new literal control, and we'll say hello SP2010. Okay, so now we've got all these things in place right here. One more parenthesis. Let's go ahead and kind of test the deploy command. You know, what's going to happen when I run this deploy command right here? Come back here. I run the deploy command. It basically goes through the steps of building the WSP file. Inside, there's a manifest.xml. What really kind of gets me is that 2 years from now, after people use these tools, you know, someone like you is going to go up, you know, to junior engineer Jimmy. That guy's in the United States. Is he over here too? Do you have junior engineer Jimmy here over in Europe? But basically, you're going to go and say, hey, I looked at your solution. That was really good. And how did you get that thing into the feature.xml file? Or how did you get that into the manifest.xml file? And he's going to look at you and goes, what's a feature.xml file? Yeah, I'm an expert SharePoint developer, but I have no idea. I've never seen a feature.xml file. Those things exist. You know, the tools just are hiding a lot more from us so that, you know, we don't have to get involved with these files if we don't want. Now, if I come back over here, after I deploy, you know, one of the things that you'll see is it added my .web part file inside here. It added it to a specific group. And the idea is that once my solution has been deployed and the feature has been activated, someone's going to be able to come through here, you know, find Ted web parts, add those things inside. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's my first, you know, project up and running. Okay, now let's go back through a couple more slides. Like I said, I don't want this to, you know, be an entire talk, you know, of the background of what extensions are all about, you know, but I wanted to at least walk through and, you know, show you the idea of, you know, how the tool set works. There's this idea of adding a feature, that you can either explicitly add a feature, or you can just add SPIs, SharePoint project items, and have the tool set add the features for you. Now, another thing that gets to be very easy to do is to add feature receivers. Let's go back here. And if I go to my feature, and I right-click on my feature, and I say add event receiver, it just basically adds the code inside here. Now, notice that there's a lot of stuff it adds inside. So what I typically like to do is just kind of take all this comment stuff. You know, they've given you things that you can uncomment, you know, but, you know, what I think you're going to find to be much more useful is just to kind of get rid of all the comments and then come down here and say override feature activated, you know, override feature deactivating. Now, think about my feature. Where does it activate? Does it activate at the site collection level or the site level? Well, that's right. This feature activates at the site collection level. So if I just kind of want to write hello world code, we'll say SP site site collection equals, and then we'll say properties dot feature dot parent as SP site. And we should check to make sure it's not null, but I'm very confident my code's going to work. So why don't we do an SP web site equals site collection dot root web, and then we'll say site dot title equals, and we'll say SharePoint tools rock. And then finally, we'll do a site dot update. And now that we've got that here, I'm just going to test the code, just kind of make sure we see it working inside the UI. Let's go back up here, and we'll say something like deactivated. Okay, so now we've got this stuff in place. Let me go ahead and test out this code. Another nice thing about the tool set is as we run the deploy command, notice that it's deactivating, it's retracting, deleting, puts things back, activates feature one. Now we can go back here and test our work. Seems like it works pretty well. I come back here and I can also say retract. And after I run retract, I go back and hey, things are looking pretty good. And there's also, you know, a pretty nice debugging experience for, you know, hitting F5 and having things work right there. Okay, so back on, you know, the tool set itself, you know, I've basically stepped through, you know, what SharePoint project items are. You know, typically they have some type of elements.xml file, not always, but quite often they do, and so they relate to one or more features. We can basically put feature receivers in place, and they kind of handle all the grunge work of adding the source file and then finding the right XML attributes to basically put the receiver assembly and receiver class, and all of a sudden that's just things that the tools hook up behind the scenes, nothing a developer ever needs to get hung up with. Another nice thing about the tool set is that it's really something that was built for two different audiences. You know, in one sense, the tool set was built for junior engineer Jimmy, someone who might never know that there's a, you know, feature.xml file behind every single feature, but also for people who know a lot about the SharePoint developer experience. The tool set wants to kind of get out of your way and let you do things when you need to. And there's going to be plenty of times where the SharePoint developer tools really don't know how to do what you need to do. They just can build whatever you're going to do into a WSP file and run the deploy command for you. Now, a good example is map folders. So if I come back here, and I think now what I'm going to have to do is say project, and this time we'll say create a new project, but this time as a farm solution. You know, one of the big differences between the sandbox and the farm solution is in a sandbox solution, you can't push anything to the file system of the front-end web server. You know, so you can't push anything in the layouts directory. You can't push anything in the images directory. So to even worry about map folders, you have to be in something that, you know, you only going to want to deploy as a farm solution. But now, if I come down here and I say something like, I would like to add a map folder. Well, there's two map folders that they know about. Hey, do you want to put something in the images directory? And so what they do is they give you a directory, images, and note that when they give you this thing, if we go down here to our favorite place, C, program files, common files, Microsoft shared, web server extensions, 14, and then inside of template images, well, you can push files inside there. Now, what's really neat about this, let's go ahead and, you know, find some particular file that I might want to push out. So I come down here, and if I go and find some particular file, and I know I have one somewhere inside here, style library, branding, images, let's just going to take, you know, this logo and push it inside here. The idea is that it's going to push this out for you automatically. Let's go ahead, choose deploy. We go ahead and push this out. And then when we go down and look at the actual images directory, you know, you can see that when you want to deploy something, just add the images map folder. Now, for both images and layouts, they have this child directory they've created inside there, which is called HEG4. It's basically the same name of your project. Because in SharePoint development, there's this best practice of application pages should go in the layouts directory, images should go in the images directory, but not directly inside those directories. We need to create child directories, probably the same name as a solution, and put those files inside there, you know, so our file names don't conflict with the out-of-the-box Microsoft files. But How about if I want to add something else? So now, what's really nice about this tool set there is, if I come down here and I say add, now I can say add mapped location. And so now, what I have the ability to do, you know, is basically put anything anywhere I want inside the SharePoint root directory. You know, say I want to put something inside the ASAPI directory because I want to push out my own SVC file for a custom WCF web service that I want to deploy so that anyone can call into it and I can put, you know, SharePoint object model code, you know, behind my own web service. I need to push a file inside here. So here's where the SharePoint tools don't really know what to do, but they're telling you, if you know what you're doing, you go ahead and have at it. So I can go ahead and put this directory inside there. And they really don't know if I need a child directory or not. In this case right here, I'm going to say, OK, add a child directory inside there. And we'll go ahead and call that heg4. And so let's now say add new item. And let's go up to data. And I'll just put an XML file inside there for now, you know, just so we can go ahead and deploy the solution. And after the solution's been deployed, you know, you're going to see that, you know, my solution package now pushes something out inside there. You know, so the whole idea of a map folder and the fact that now, if you know exactly how SharePoint works and you want to deploy a set of files anywhere inside the SharePoint root, you know, you have the ability to do that. Okay. Let's keep moving through and get to the extension parts. So, let me come back to my slides. Okay, now, you saw I ran this command, which is the deploy command. Actually, before we get to the extension, a couple more background things I want to explain about just the SharePoint tools in general. Every time you create a project from one of those SharePoint project templates, our project is a special project referred to as a SharePoint project. And one thing that it always does is it gives us those three commands, deploy, retract, and package. What happens when you run the deploy command? The answer is it depends. It depends what deployment configuration that you have. Now, if I go to my project properties of a SharePoint project, I get to a page that has a bunch of tabs in it. And so what I'm going to do to kind of see these is that I say properties, and then at the very bottom, I have the SharePoint tab. And if we kind of look at this SharePoint tab, that's what we have inside here. And there's basically two deployment configurations, one which is default, one which is no activation. Note that the two built-in ones, default, no activation, cannot be edited. You can view what's inside them. If you want, you can create your own. So let's go ahead and create deployment configuration 3, just so we can have a third one in. Now, if we look at the first one, default, it pretty much just has all these different things. Pre, deployment command, recycle, the app pool, add solution, activate features. So basically, we can go ahead and create these. But you know what I usually find is I get by just on the two built-in ones. And if we look at default, it basically runs the pre-deploy command. What is the pre-deploy command? The pre-deploy command is something where up at the top of this dialog, you have two text boxes. So what are you going to put in here? You can put a call to STS-ADM if you're old school. You know, you could put a call to a PowerShell script that could go ahead and run custom things for you. So basically, you just have, you know, an open ticket to put whatever pre-processing instructions and post-processing instructions you want in the deploy command. So by default, there's nothing inside there. And so if I look at view, the first thing we do is we run the pre-deployment command, but there is none, so nothing happens. Recycle the IIS application pool. Retract, and then add the solution. Note that if you've worked kind of down at the metal with SharePoint, when you have a solution package, you know, there's the add SP solution, which is basically the installing part. And then there's the second, which is the install SP solution, which is the deploying step. They don't split that out. You know, so you can't do half without kind of going off road here and customizing it yourself. So when they say add solution, it means add it, install it, and deploy it. And same thing with retract, which is retract and delete it. And then they also activate features at the end. So this is just a convenience. Let's say that after I've taken my farm solution and we basically retracted everything and yanked it out, and now we push the solution back in, how about we go to that test site? Oh, can you automatically activate these features just so I can kind of see the code automatically execute or the items automatically get created? You know, so that's just kind of a convenience. And the two different deployment configurations that are built in, the only difference between the two is that no activation doesn't activate the features. Now, one of the nice things about this system right here is you have all these individual deployment steps. The ones we see here are the ones we get out of the box, but deployment steps are an extensibility point. You know, so if you wanted to be famous, you could create your own custom, you know, upgrade deployment step, and with an extension, you could install it, and you could start using that. But I think what most people find is that the two built-in ones out of the box are pretty good, and that, you know, unless you want to get into, you know, really doing some advanced stuff, I would just say that I'd come down here and just take my deployment configuration and just switch back and forth between default and no activation for regular development. Do you want the features activated automatically? Or do you want to just deploy, and then do you want to go drive the activation of your features through the browser? And if you want to do that, you know, just go ahead and put it to no activation. Okay. Now, talked about the SharePoint project items, but now let's get down to a little bit more detail. A SharePoint project item, first of all, is always going to be seen as a folder inside of your project. And typically, it's got an elements.xml file. Doesn't have to, but that's just a kind of a general pattern that we see with a lot of them. It could also have code inside there. But what's really nice about that is, remember when you were using WSP Builder or STS Dev and you had the web part? So the .cs file had to go over here. The .web part file kind of had to go inside your SharePoint root directory structure that mirrored that. And so kind of my point is that these three files that all had to do with the same component had to be spread out across the project because that's the way the project required things to be. But now the project structure is saying, hey, put these three things together. It makes a lot more sense. And we'll track, you know, what has to happen with all these files behind the scenes. Now, what you'll see is that each individual file has all these attributes that are being tracked on it. And if I come back here, you know, and we take a look at something like, let's go back to Hague 3, and inside of this project right here, well, what do we have? We have an element manifest, and we have a no deployment file, and we have an element file, and here's the location root. You know, so it's important that they track all these, and just it gets to be so much easier to create things. Also, notice that the SPI, the SharePoint Project Item instance, has a folder. It also has its own property sheet. And it can have things like feature receivers, feature properties, output references, safe control entries. You know, so that gets to be a very important aspect of this. Now, let's look at this .web part file right here. Ted's web parts. Okay, that's great. If I come back here, and we went to edit page, and then I say add web part, I can come back here, and I can kind of see the .web part file. What if I wanted to make a change? There's this issue where the first time I hit deploy, the .web part file got pushed into the target testing sites, top-level sites, web part gallery. So in SharePoint 2007, we might have had to go up and delete that file before we can activate the feature and push the new copy inside there. God forbid any of us would ever write code in the deactivating event handler to delete a .web part file, even though that's what we should do. We just told Microsoft, we're not going to do it until you start doing it. Okay. It's my subtle American attempt at humor. I apologize. Let's keep going through here. But now, let's go ahead and switch that to, you know, Fred's web part. And I'm going to go ahead and hit deploy solution. And what I want you to see here is that many SharePoint project items support something called deployment conflict resolution. So things like list instance, module, and web part are three different types of project items that all basically, during feature activation, put artifacts into the site. And if we then try to, you know, activate a feature a second time in our testing and that initial file was still there, it would break our testing. So the whole idea of deployment conflict resolution is it's a deployment, or sorry, a design development time only feature. When your code releases to production, you don't have any of this nice stuff. But what we, you know, have is some code that says, hey, there's a webpart1.webpart file. I can't really test activation unless I delete that thing first. You know, so the fact that these things get deleted automatically, so that after the fact, I can come back up here, and let's go ahead and hit, you know, refresh on this guy, and add web part, and we'll come down here, and you can kind of see that thing changed. Okay. Now, that was the background of, you know, what are the Visual Studio, you know, the SharePoint developer tools all about in Visual Studio 2010. There's some pretty nice stuff that we get out of the box. But what you're going to find is there's a bunch of scenarios that aren't supported. You know, and maybe the support is there's no custom item, project item. So I have to go and add a project item of type empty element, and I have to copy and paste, you know, some XML in. You know, that might be one step I have to do. Another step might be that, you know, I want to put something into the feature.xml file or the manifest.xml file. You know, but the final step is to extend it with Visual Studio and to create a full-blown extension. Okay, let me do one more demo before I start down the Visual Studio extensions road. Let's say that back here inside of our project, there's something that you know, Visual Studio and the SharePoint developer tools don't know how to do. But I know it's valid XML to put in the feature.xml file. So if I go to a feature, let's go to feature, let's go to main site. Note that you have kind of this pretty view of the feature. You also have the properties sheet of the feature that shows you a lot more. But you know, the main style is for you not to directly write into a feature.xml file like you have been in SharePoint 2007. If I say manifest, well, it's going to show me what the feature.xml file is going to look like. There's also edit options. And I can say open an XML editor, but I think what you're going to find is that it's easier if you just go down here and find the template.xml file behind a feature. Let's open that up. Now, in general, you don't need to put anything inside here that the SharePoint developer tools are going to do for you. But is there anything they don't know how to do? Absolutely. They don't know anything about upgrade actions. So if you wanted to put something like upgrade actions in place right here, you know, maybe we want to go ahead and you know, apply an element manifest, something like that. So we put a particular element manifest location equals you know, elements.xml. And what I want you to see as I move over here, you know, you can see that what I'm putting inside there is being written inside. You know, so with both the feature.xml file for every feature and also with the manifest.xml file, you know, it's possible to put things inside there. Note that when you open these files, if you try to compile, it's going to complain because it doesn't meet the schema. You know, but this file is not meant to meet the schema. it kind of gets the extra XML that's going to go inside there. One other technique that we can use is let's go to our package. Let's go to our package, which once again has a package template.xml file behind it. If I go and take a look at my manifest, hey, that's what it's going to look like. A lot of times, you won't even need to touch this file. But one new thing that we have in SharePoint in 2010, we didn't have in SharePoint 2007, is this ability to add a dependency on solution package A when you're designing solution package B. You know, so the scenario is solution package A has this DLL, and it's got these methods, and I didn't want to rewrite them. So in solution package B, we have some code that referenced the DLL and started calling some of the methods. So as long as solution package A is always installed and deployed, when I install and deploy solution package B, it works fine. However, there was this issue where there was a farm where the farm administrator installed and deployed solution package B, and installed and deployed just fine, started working until the user got to that one page that used my code that then experienced the could not load assembly error. So now what we can do is we can define these dependencies between the two different solution packages. Now, once again, Visual Studio and the SharePoint developer tools don't know how to do this, but what they're telling you is, hey, if you know what you're doing, that's fine. We'll come up here. There is an activation dependency, and we'll define an activation dependency. And so, you know, what's my solution ID? You know, so there's GUID 123, and then what's the solution name? You know, my package. And all of a sudden, you know, what we're going to see is that, you know, that's going to build your activation dependency inside here. Okay. So the first thing is, you know, don't go down this road of building full-blown Visual Studio extensions that are going to take you, you know, probably months, not weeks to build. If you can basically just add a little bit of PowerShell or kind of extend these out of the box, you know, so get to know the tool set and get to know kind of the easy extension points before you start going down this next road that we're going to go down. Okay. Now, finally, I think I can get into what you all came here for, which is, you know, creating these extensions with Visual Studio. Now, in Visual Studio, before the 2010 release, you know, adding code behind Visual Studio, you know, was either kind of the simple quirky method, which wasn't very powerful, or the kind of the more advanced way that was pretty hairy, or just the mind-boggling thing of creating these package add-ins. And so one thing that they did in Visual Studio 2010 is just to really lower the barrier of entry for what you had to know to create a piece of code, you know, to be a project item template. Now, one of the things we have is this new extensibility strategy, which is based on this new Microsoft Extensibility Framework, MEF. And I'm going to kind of explain what that is. And you're going to see, you know, why we have to add a certain reference to a new DLL. It's going to be based on MEF. We also have this new deployment model with V6 files. And V6 files is just something where I give you the V6 file. If you have Visual Studio installed in your machine, you'll double-click on it. It's a self-installing file. It installs. You automatically start using it. So it's just going to be a much easier story. So let's go ahead and start by going back over to Visual Studio. And inside of Visual Studio, I'm going to say new project. And we're going to go down here to extensibility. And look for these different project types that we have inside here. And extensibility, and I'm messing myself up because I forgot to come down here and drop. Oh, and there's everything back here again. Now, here's this first step, leap of faith. SharePoint is all about .NET 3.5. Visual Studio is built on .NET 4. So now we're going to create components, you know, using .NET 4, but whenever they talk to SharePoint, we kind of have to go through this strange layer to kind of go into a different process as talking 3.5. Okay, so I go ahead and I create this V6 project. So I want to call this, you know, Ted's first add-in. So we'll go ahead and we'll create this particular project. Now, once we create this project, we've got this little add-in file right here. Let me go ahead and build this guy. And so now I've built him. Let's go back here. Ted's first add-in, build, debug, V6. Let's go ahead and double-click the V6 file. You double-click the V6 file and says install. All done. Now, every time you run that V6 installation, you know, we're going to have to shut down Visual Studio. We're then going to have to open it back up again. And what we can now see is that if I go to the extension manager, there's Ted's first add-in. So the idea is that I've got this new extension. I think it's really neat. I send you an email. There's a V6 file attached to the email. You got Visual Studio on your machine, you double click on it, all of a sudden, my code is there just running on your particular machine. Now, if you go to the tools menu, there's this thing called the extension manager. Because you might say that's great until you start using it, then Ted's code might not be running so great on your machine. You know, so you always have the ability, you know, to come through here, you know, and to disable, and I don't want the thing running right now, or to uninstall the whole thing. And when you uninstall, you know, once again, you have to kind of shut down and restart. You know, but that's the idea. Now, let's go ahead and say new project and V6. And so now, let's go ahead and say Ted's second add-in. And we'll create a V6 project. And this time, I'm going to hit the F5 key. I hit the F5 key, and what happens is Visual Studio starts another instance of Visual Studio. Now, it's not in the registry, but there's some other place on the file system where they keep files that basically says that, you know, this extension has been installed and registered, and this extension has been installed and registered. And so when you hit F5, they start another instance of Visual Studio, but they're not looking at your personal settings. They, you know, think of it as they create a virtual hive. So they automatically register that V6 file inside there. And so what that means is that, you know, without you having to, you know, be double-clicking and shutting down and restarting Visual Studio a lot, let's go back up here to Tools, Extension Manager. You know, you can see Ted's second add-in has been loaded inside there, and we can go ahead and start using that. Okay, now, let's shut down this second instance of Visual Studio and get back to the first. And take a look at this set of extensions inside there. So there's Ted's second add-in. And there's this V6 file. I'm going to make a copy of the V6 file. It's a self-compressed file. You know, so with Microsoft, you have the 50-50 chance whether it's a zip file or a CAB file. So let's go back here. You know, is it a zip file? Yes, it is. So basically, it's got this contenttypes.xml file, and it's got an extension.v6 manifest inside there. If you've used OpenXML with Office documents, you know, you'll probably recognize the contenttypes.xml file. You know, so they're just using the regular package file format that they use in OpenXML file formats. Now, let's take one more step. Let's come down here and say, well, you know, what we want to add is we want to add something with the DLL. So I'm going to come down here and we're going to say, let's go ahead and add a new project. And this time, my second project, I'm just going to add a regular class library. So let's go down here, and this is, you know, Ted's Impel. And I have a class inside there. And if we go to this particular project right here, get Ted's add-in, got this guy, open it up. Okay, what am I looking for? There is the project inside here. Now, there's a special way to get the thing to be built into the... Okay, so I come back here. What we need to do is we need to build a DLL that's going to have our extension code. Now, I could have put the .cs file inside of the project that's building the v6 file, but for various reasons, the team that have built these templates want us to work in separate projects, one that builds the DLL, one that just builds the v6 file. And so if I go back to the v6 file inside here, and we make this guy a little bit bigger, I can add references, I can add content inside here. So what do I want to add? Do I want to add a MEF component, and what is the project in question? Let's go ahead and add that piece in place right here. And now that we've done that, let's see if this finally gives me the ability to come through here. Okay, so now that I've kind of added this into the project, let's one more time, rebuild the solution inside here. And as we rebuild the solution, I want to once again just kind of step down and kind of see how that file is getting built out. So back one more time into debug, and there is the add-in, and let me hit F2, and copy.zip. What I wanted to show you is, the DLL is now being embedded inside there. So what we're going to do is we're going to build these two projects. One's going to build the v6 project. The other is going to be a DLL. And because it's talking to Visual Studio, it's going to be based on .NET 4.0, not .NET 3.5. Now, it's possible, and I'm not going to go this far in my demo, that I might have to add a second DLL. You might have to add a second DLL, which is based on .NET 3.5, to talk to SharePoint. Because when you want to talk to SharePoint, SharePoint can't load into a .NET 4.0 initialized process. So there's these things called SharePoint commands. And then what you have is you have two different DLLs, the .NET 4.0 one, which loads into Visual Studio, and then another .NET 3.5 one, which loads into another process that Visual Studio can call into. So basically, it can talk to the SharePoint object model. So things can get kind of complicated in that respect. Okay, now let's go ahead and move through a couple more of the slides. Now you've seen some of the background work. So first thing we saw here is that we have this v6 packaging format. And when we're all done, I hand you the v6 file, you double click on it, my extension's installed on your machine. On my development machine, while I'm building my extension, I create the v6 project, I add extra projects inside there, and generally I'm just going to hit the F5 key to do my testing. Okay, now, next thing we're going to do, we've talked about the v6 project, now we have to bring in the second big concept, and that is we have this framework, which is called MEF, the Microsoft Extensibility Framework. And the thing is built into .NET 4.0. And there is this particular DLL, system.componentModel.composition.dll, that comes with 4.0. And we're going to have to add a reference to this DLL because there are going to be certain attributes in place. Now, how many people here are old enough to remember COM programming? Anybody? Okay, a couple of us old-timers. There's this pattern that finally got formalized in .NET. There's this idea that there's someone who needs a service and someone who provides a service, and so the provider has some interface and they implement it, and the consumer wants to consume that interface, and then we need someone, remember the guy called the scum service control manager, you know, who finds the interface reference and hands it off? So at the end of the day, it's pretty much that pattern that the Microsoft Extensibility Framework maps up. So what we have is we have this notion of the extensible application that imports interfaces. And we have the extension component that exports interfaces. So one of the things that we're going to do is we're going to add this assembly, which is the MEF assembly, so we can start adding exports attributes onto some of our classes. Now, Visual Studio, you know, was one of the first pieces of software in Microsoft that basically, you know, drank the Kool-Aid and said, hey, we're going to use the Microsoft Extensibility Framework. When you want to extend Visual Studio, find out what classes we import, export them, and we'll go ahead and get going there. Now, the SharePoint developer tools are very interesting because the SharePoint developer tools, when they were built, they export interfaces that are imported by Visual Studio. So that's how they basically have built out the entire project system. Every time you create a special SharePoint project, a bunch of extra code loads in those deploy commands. But the SharePoint developer tools and the team who built them, you know, weren't happy just being people that exported interfaces. They also wanted you to be able to use MEF to extend what they've done. So the SharePoint developer tools also import a specific set of interfaces as well. Now, what we're going to do, there's four extensibility interfaces that are listed here. There's actually eight. If I want to go and, you know, take a look at, you know, exactly what are the interfaces, I wish that I had these on my slides. I'm just going to open up this Word document right here. And so basically we have SharePoint project extension. And so let's say that right next to the deploy command, you know, you want to have, you know, deploy upgrade, something like that. You want to add extra menu commands inside there. You could just do a project extension. There's SharePoint project item type provider. I'm going to show you a demo of one of those. There's the item type extension. So let's say that you didn't want to create your own project item, but you took one of the built-in ones like web part or module, and you wanted to add some new menus or some new properties inside there. You know, so you can extend, you know, either one of yours or one of the out-of-the-box ones with the extender. There's the Explorer type provider and Explorer type extension. And that is that you have the SharePoint Explorer over here. And the SharePoint Explorer, you know, by itself, you know, probably isn't all that interesting. But the fact that you could go to any one of these nodes and, you know, change its behavior, or you can add your own nodes for tracking web part instances, you know, or workflow instances. You know, I've seen some developers go down that road of, you know, creating extensions that extend that. Okay. And then there's also iDeployment step. And then there's two other ones called iFeature validation rule and iPackage validation rule, so that if someone is, you know, using your particular extension, that you might flag things as not being allowed. Okay, now let's do this. Let's go back to the slides, a couple more slides. So what we're going to do is we're going to use the export attribute, and we're going to export a certain type. We're going to export iSharePoint project extension. And once we do that, you know, we should be able to tap into something. So let's see if we can go down that road. Okay, so in my add-ins, we'll go to, let's close this down. Let's close this down. Let's close this down. go to my class, and we'll name it to Ted's extension. .cs. And now that we've done that, we're going to go ahead and add some references in. And so the references that we need to add in, I'm going to take a second for this to fill out. Is going to be system component model dot composition. We'll go ahead and we'll add that one in. And then second reference that we're going to add in is going to be for Microsoft dot Visual Studio dot SharePoint. And there's that right there. Okay, and so if we come back up here and we put some using statements in place, using system.componentModel.composition and using Microsoft.visualstudio.sharepoint. Okay, so now we'll take our class and we'll go ahead and put the export attribute. You know, so remember that this guy comes from MEF, you know, not from the SharePoint specific stuff. So we're going to say export. We're going to say type of, and then it's going to be I SharePoint project extension. Okay, so now that we've got that in place right here, the next thing we're going to say is I SharePoint project extension. Now, when you implement this particular interface, let's go ahead and implement that interface. It has one method. It's got an initialize method. And there's this thing which is called the project service that we're going to, you know, want to be able to hang on to once in a while. So I'm going to say, protected, and we'll just call this project service. And we'll say PS equals project service inside here. Okay, now project service dot, and there's this one guy called logger. So when I start writing these components, you know, what we're going to see is that you can write into the output window. That's the way that you basically communicate with the developer that's using your extensions. It's also how we do the console write line of debugging when we get started. So I'm going to go to this logger, and I'm going to go ahead, and we're just going to like write hello world inside there. So we'll come down here, write line, and we'll go ahead, you know, say hello from, Ted's extension. And now we've got that inside there. There's a second argument that I have to put, log category message. Okay, so now that we have that inside, let's go ahead and test it out. So I'll hit the F5 key. Once we hit the F5 key, we're starting another instance of Visual Studio. You know, but this is the one where my projects should be inside there. Let's go ahead and say new project. And let's go ahead and create a new SharePoint project. And I'll just call this one TED1. We'll go ahead, we'll create this sandbox solution. And as we create this thing, hello from TED's extension. So now there's this idea of SharePoint project extensions, and there's this initialize. Now, let's go, and I guess I need to shut everything down here. If I'm going to go write some code in here. Let's go back here and stop debugging. Override. And there's really nothing else other than initialize. So let's go back here to the service. So there's this project service. And now I look down project service, and now I see there's all these different events. And I can put event handlers in place. Project initialized. Come down here and plus equals and tab, tab. You know that trick, right? The plus equals tab, tab trick? Can't get by without that one. Let's see that one more time. Make it a little bit smaller. But now we'll say, project service So there's all these different event handlers inside here. Project name change, property. So these are things where, you know, if you want to do something like, you know, add a menu command inside there, you could go ahead and add one of these handlers. But what I was trying to get at here is, okay, so project initialized. I've already done that one. Let's do project menu items requested. Notice that that's an event. So plus equals is the C# way to add the event handler inside there. And if I hit tab once and tab twice, you know, basically just kind of creates that for you. So now let's go ahead and say, you know, ps dot, and I kind of wrote to the logger up here. Let's now write to the logger here. Let's now, you know, write to the logger here. And so I'm going to go ahead and you know, basically put inside what the names of these methods are, because I think this is probably a pretty good way for, you know, you to get started, you know, as you start using this. Okay, now write some code, go ahead, push F5 one more time. So I basically just want to see when my events are firing, start kind of testing those out. Now, one thing you can see is my code doesn't load in until I load my first SharePoint project. So if I said new and I created a project that's not a SharePoint project, none of my code would load in. So the SharePoint developer tools don't even load into Visual Studio until you add your first SharePoint project. But as soon as you create or open any SharePoint project, your extension is going to load in. And down here, you can see that, hey, these things got created there. Now, let's do something interesting. Let's go ahead and close this. And let's now say new SharePoint project. We're going to create a second SharePoint project. And notice that project initialize ran. But what I wanted you to see is that one of these methods didn't run. Initialize just runs once per process. So initialize loads in all your code and has to do the initialization that's not project specific. But if you want to load code when one particular project comes in, well, you know, you can do that as well. Now, let's say that, you know, under menu items requested. Okay, well, we've got this event argument that's passed in. E, and let me go back, stop the debugger. And we'll go E dot, and action, add menu items, action menu items. Yeah, that sounds pretty good. If I say add menu items dot add, what are we going to add inside here? So let's say that I menu item menu one equals, and we'll go ahead and say test, and then we'll say menu one dot. What happens, you know, when I click this? Plus equals tab tab, and once again we'll just say ps dot logger dot write line, you know, you clicked me, and now we'll go ahead and put that into that, you know, logger category right here. But now, you know, what I want you to see is, let's go ahead and run it one more time. And I want you to kind of see how I've kind of hooked into the menu system by, you know, adding this extension inside there. So this time we'll come up and let's open an existing project, you know, just to say we open an existing project and, you know, project initialized, menu items requested. We come down here and there is my test menu item. I go ahead and click on the test menu item, and you clicked me. Now, so there's a lot of code that you're going to have to learn how to write behind the scenes here. You know, and certainly the object model that, you know, we're given to programmatically create a project item and change a project item, you know, takes a lot of mastery of just how things work, you know, out of the box in SharePoint. But now I've kind of got you to the point where you can see it's not rocket science to, you know, create the two projects and put them together. So now what I want to do is I kind of want to finish up by, you know, instead of just showing you hello world, kind of how we can stitch all these things together and come up with something useful. So as an example, I've been writing an MSDN paper, you know, based on this specific branding approach. So I've got this project called Branding 101. And the idea is I want to apply branding to my site. And so there's a bunch of things that I'm going to worry about. One is I wanted to work with both SharePoint Foundation and I wanted to work with SharePoint Server, you know, 2010. Secondly, I want it to work inside the sandbox. So what I've done is I've basically built something where we have a module, that's the master page gallery, and it's got a branding master 101. Also, we have a second module which pushes out files to the style library, like a styles.cs file and an images background file. And then also, there's going to be a feature. And there's a feature that activates at the site collection level. And inside of this particular feature, let's go back here and kind of take a look at, you know, what code that we have here. When this particular feature activates, we're going to get the top level site, and then we're going to enumerate through every single site inside that site collection, and we're going to point to our custom master page, branding101.master. Now also, we're going to use CSS. Now, how do we put the link, you know, in the master page to the CSS file? And that's one of those things where lots of different techniques, some are better than others. But the thing that you have to watch out for is don't just test it at the site collection at the root of a web app. You know, make sure you test it, you know, at a site collection that's not at the root, in sites that are not at the root of that, and does your technique really work? Now, there's a CSS registration control, and that works pretty well if you have SharePoint Server. But there is this expression, which is $SPURL, that for some ungodly reason only comes with SharePoint Server. It doesn't work with SharePoint Foundation. So I tend to avoid CSS registration controls unless I know SharePoint Server is going to be there. So what I've done in this solution to kind of give us the highest level of support is to use the alternate CSS URL. And so our solution puts a master page in the master page gallery. It puts a styles.css file in the style library. One thing that's nice about SharePoint 2010 is the style library is now in every single site, not just publishing sites. Well, at least it's at the top level of every site. And then we change these particular properties. So I created this one time, and I said, gosh, you know, would it be possible to take this and kind of bottle it up so we could basically put it out, you know, inside of an extension project? So let's now go ahead and open up this other project. And this other project that I have kind of shows you a larger effort, you know, of what can be done, you know, using these tools. So let me close some of these different files. So what we have is we have this CPT Visual Studio branding, and we have this manifest file down there, and we have a map component, but now we also have some item templates. And the item templates, you know, are what take some time to get used to. So just to kind of give you an idea of what one of these things looks like. Well, there has to be this VS template file. And the VS template file says, okay, if you create a new SharePoint project item, you know, what's going to be its name, what's going to be the default name, CPT branding, so it's going to be CPT branding 1 or 2 or 3. You know, does my code require certain references be, you know, in the project or have to be added to the project? And now we're going to start adding these particular items inside there. You know, so I have all these different things. Now, for every project item that you want, you need one of these SP data files. So here's an SP data file that basically says, okay, well, make sure we have a site scope feature and go ahead and add an event handler to it, and then we're going to add some other files. Okay, let me go ahead and hit the F5 key right here. Anyone know if, for time-wise, do we have 14 more minutes or are we 1 minute over at this point? Does anyone know what time the session's supposed to end? I'm over at this point? Thank you, Scott. My buddy American in the back there. Okay, so we've got this new thing of Visual Studio here. So what I should do is run one more great demo, Scott, to wow them and then let them go? Okay. So now this guy starts up. And I come down here. I want a new SharePoint project. So we'll go ahead and we'll create this empty SharePoint project. And this one, let's name it after Scott, because Scott saved the day here. We'll go ahead and create this project called Scott. And we'll go ahead and choose Finish. And there's nothing going on in my project yet. So now, with this Visual Studio extension that I've created, let's go ahead and say Add New Item. And there's my CPT site branding. I can name it anything. I'm just going to say CPT branding 1. We'll go ahead and choose Add. And you can see from, you know, the instructions that I have inside that add-in, it's going to add, you know, all these specific things into the code right there. So it added in the master page gallery, my starting master page. It added in a child web handler. So every time a new child site's created, an event handler is going to fire. You know, but more importantly, you know, now let's go ahead and just deploy this project. I go ahead and I run this the first time. And now we come back here. It's retracting the solution. Adding Scott WSP. It added one site collection level feature inside there. And activating the features. And now we'll come back here, hit the F5 key. And all of a sudden, like, my branding's, you know, been put in place right here. You know, so the idea is that now, you know, you can kind of take this extension. You can go ahead, add it to your machine. You can add this branding project right here. Now you can work on your master page. You can come to the style library, just start adding images. And now it's just, you know, a matter of, you know, adding these other pieces inside. You know, so at the end of the day, what's it really about? It's about someone like me knowing about SharePoint and kind of knowing enough about the tool set where I can kind of save you the trouble of figuring out how to plug all the pieces in. You know, so you can really just kind of concentrate on the .master page and the .css file and adding GIFs into your images. You know, so once again, at the end of the day, this session is not about making money. It's about making friends and being famous. You know, creating these extensions is going to help people. And we have a great community effort. And I think my last closing note will just be that the people that built the SharePoint developer tools, you know, are really good folks. They're really concerned. And I think the more we have a community effort and we see these type of things, they're going to show up in the tool set. Or they're going to take your extension and they're going to put it up on MSDN and make it easy for people to download. Okay, so hopefully that gives you a sense of, you know, how to build these tools. I think I better go ahead and finish up, or my next presenter. Scott, are you the next presenter? Okay, you're used to me, though. okay, so, you know, basically the extensions, I think, are not something that's easy to create. You know, so it's not like you're going to go back in 3 days and get up to speed on this stuff. You know, but it's something that you wanted to do and you kind of like to plug in the community. It's there for you. And even if you, you know, aren't into the visibility and fame, maybe you wanted to understand this from the part of the consumer. someone who knows someone like Scott or Ted or Wouter and will be willing to kind of download their code and start using their extensions. Okay. Other than that, I'd be happy to take questions. I think I should step off the stage now and let Scott up here. But thank you, everyone, for attending.